And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And it's a very special episode tonight. Later on, we've got the irrepressible Sarah Black from AFL.com.au, the, among other things, the AFLW draft expert, and she's very kindly agreed to come on the show. And you know how much I love a draft, Andy, so really looking forward to that.
Yep, and we've already recorded the interviews in the can, and as always, she really, really interesting and well-researched subject. But Nick, I don't want to bury the lead. I made quite an exciting discovery today.
No, so look, before the interview with Sarah, we're just setting things up, and I came online, and predictably, you were raving about today's discovery.
Yeah, so for those who aren't on Twitter, Rhett Bartlett does nice little... He's going through this, tweeting these old 80s and 90s videos, particularly with a strong Richo focus of these weird TV spots that he did.
Richo did more than his share of weird TV, it has to be said.
Yeah, they're often quite entertaining. But yes, this one was Richo showing, I think it was Jim Wilson, around his bachelor pad. His, fair to say, sparsely decorated bachelor pad.
It honestly, I mean, he clearly lived there, but it had almost no personality whatsoever.
Yes, and a very unconvincing cookbook on the benchtop. But it had a very distinctive staircase, and I looked and looked again and realised that that was the staircase in the townhouse in Fitzroy that I currently live in. And I had in the past received mail to an M. Richardson, but, you know, it's a common name. I didn't think anything of it. And I realised that Richo lived in my current house.
Huh. Must have been quite some time ago. Well, the video was from 1999.
Yeah, he said he bought it after it was built. So, yeah. It was a little while. There's been a few people in it since, so there's no sort of... I'm not sure if there's any much Richo magic left on the walls, and it's definitely been painted since then. But, a few observations for you, Nick. Firstly, you know, it really is... You could see Richo's priorities at the time because it is very well positioned for pubs and bars.
Yeah. Young man around town, yeah.
And secondly, as you know, because you've stayed here, there's an upstairs shower which is quite... If you're walking on the right angle on the street, you basically get a top-up view of someone in the shower. So it's, you know, it's a shower for someone who's, you know, comfortable in their body, which, you know, I'm sure a young Richo was. So, you know, obviously not shy. But, yeah, it was... and also there's a very expensive sound system here, which I'm not sure Richo installed or not, but it's sort of, you know, would fit his MO of being a big music lover. So, my main reaction was that I'm a bit flat now because I'm now definitively not the best footballer who's ever lived in this house.
Yeah. Oh well. it's a good rub.
Yeah. Anyway, it was it's weird, but I just can't believe the National Trust hasn't sort of listed every place that Richo's lived in as a home of national significance.
There's no plaque on the wall. It's very disappointing.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you for that self-indulgent vinaigrette.
So if I had to rank sort of the events of the past week, so Melbourne coming out of lockdown, AFLW draft, you living in Richo's house, the game against Geelong, of the things that I would like to talk about, the game against Geelong is a clear fourth.
Yes. Okay, couple of positives, Nick. Rioli's really growing into that that backline runner role. The club put on, not in disposals, but the club put on, because he won the Jeep player of the match, they put on a little vinaigrette of his highlights. They were impressive, like line breaking, giving and going. And there was a few times actually he sprinted on and follow up work that didn't get rewarded, but he was really creating an option well. His speed allows him to straighten up when kicking, which means he can often deliver it well. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of promise there.
I know the Dan's ability to sort of keep his head while others lose him, I think's a newfound strength. But yeah, he's adapted better to the role, and yeah, I think he's a real standout for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. With the recognition that you'd still expect more improvement, but what's been there is really good. I mean, he still has slightly the issue that he's always had, that he doesn't get enough of the football, but he's definitely getting more of it. And you know, it is coming along really nicely. A couple of other things, Nick, while we're talking backline, is Mansell, I believe, had his career high disposals at 17.
Another career high. And look, it's burying the lead not to talk about the chase down tackle on Dangerfield.
Oh yeah, yep. Very good point.
Like having said last week, that he's quick rather than blistering fast. And look, Dangerfield did have a bounce, which I thought was pretty arrogant. But yeah, that was a really nice bit of play.
Yeah, it was. Actually, look, you know, one takeaway from the game that I found sort of upsetting is not only did they sort of beat us relatively easily, although, you know, as many have pointed out, we did shoot for goal terribly.
And they kicked everything. Like,
yeah, they did.
I was going through their goals, and you know, there wasn't, you know, they weren't super difficult, but all the 50-50 ones just seemed to sail through.
Yeah, but you know,
they kicked 13-5, like 15-5. Sorry, it was a very accurate day at the office.
Yeah, it was sort of one thing I did not like is that they actually didn't seem that excited to be beating us. You know, they were relatively restrained. Which,
they've beaten us before. Honestly, it was quite similar to the other Geelong game in terms of the inside 50s, and the expected score were a lot closer than the result, both on the scoreboard and in our hearts. But yeah, they're still the thing of, you know, they can win all of these forgettable games as they want, but they've still come up short against us in every final.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we will have that over them, hopefully, for years to come. There's a couple of other things, actually, I just want to knock off a couple of positives before I talk about what's going wrong. And also, as Sarah Black mentioned, Stacky's starting to look, even though he only had 12 positions, he's starting to look more and more assured, put on a really nice big hit, which, you know.
We love those big hits, yeah.
Top Viney flashbacks on the same wing of the MCG. Also, Toby, even though he can't jump, and we're suffering in the ruck because of it, he still was actually our top rated player on champion data ratings, not the AFL ratings. 5 clearances, 50 pressure points, 10 contested possessions. So good on Toby. Is still being is still, considering he is not fully fit. You know, that is just not how he jumps when he's fully fit. He's still battling manfully.
He only had one mark though, which compared to last week when he's intercept marking. And it often is, was a huge strength. It wasn't the way the play developed. He just wasn't able to have that impact dropping back that he sometimes has.
Yeah, and another positive is Jack Ross. By the way, we should have mentioned Rioli had 7 tackles. Jack Ross.
Dan, as always, is the man.
Jack Ross had 25 touches, and like, some of them were nondescript, and he missed a few targets he should have hit, but he still had 500 metres gain, so he was not like it was a game, you know, it was probably in a soccer rating style it might have only been a 6.5 out of 10, but it was still a game that showed something.
Yeah, look, we're casting around for people in the Basher Hooley role, and Basher's clearly a better kick, but it's sort of just finding a niche in the team for him. So yeah, I thought his work rate was good, even if he's execution was okay.
Yeah, just okay. And I make this point with Sarah, but like, I know a lot of us are wondering why Josh Caddy isn't playing, and we don't have the answer other than, you know, what we can see is he's not particularly fast. But you've also got to remember, okay, we're annoyed Cads isn't playing, but which, if Cads plays this exact statistical game, who would you rather have play it, Ross or Caddy? You know, someone who's got more upside to come, or a guy who's tapped out? So as frustrating, sort of, like, we're all asking the question about Caddy, but, you know, also remembering he's sort of tapped out as a player, as in his maximum capacity, whereas, you know,
he is what he is. Yeah.
Where there is just still a chance for more upside with Ross. So, one to remember. Now, I want to sort of talk about a bit about the structure of the team, and it's not going to be that positive, but is there any other positives that were for you from the game, Nick?
Oh, no, we've already talked about Mansell. Look, Grimes is going really well. The bookends can look all their teammates in the eye, I thought. Both Jack and Grimes.
Yeah, Jack was great. He had nine score involvements. Really well. Yep. Completely agree with that. Jack actually had 10 contested possessions to show he was giving it pretty... he was doing some pretty heavy sledding. Now, there's two things that, I mean, our scoring's been pretty anemic. One goal a game for the first half.
That was kind of painful.
And this is a bit of a trend. And there's sort of two thoughts, and they're not actually that related. First is the centre clearance is a real worry. And we discussed that before.
Well, on the centre clearance, so obviously you... Losing Dusty is a huge blow, both for the centre clearance, but also for our forward firepower. But would you believe that Shane Edwards is averaging the second highest amount of disposals for his career in his age 32 season, and yet his last three games, where he's been in and out of the side with injury, he hasn't really had much impact?
No, that is interesting, but... The thing is, like, even before Dusty was injured, you know, we talked about a few weeks ago, Prestia, I think, was big loss, as was Nank. We're just, whatever's, Shedder's not getting it done in the centre clearance,
I think he needs just a run of consistent footy and getting his body right. That's my impression.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but look, the coaches started Andrew Parker in the centre square in the first bounce of the game.
Andrew
Parker. Anyway, Matthew Parker. Like, if that's like not sending a great big flare up into the air saying, we know this is a big issue and we're desperately searching around for fixes, I don't know what is. So, that's a big structural problem, and it's a problem is that, you know, we've probably, if we didn't get flogged in that over the last 6 weeks, we probably win at least two more games. So that's a problem. The second thing is, one of the reasons we're not scoring as well is because, you know, we're a team that scores really well off intercepts and turnovers. And, you know, a lot of the backline guys who get those intercepts and turnovers aren't playing. Things like Ryan Garthwaite is not only getting a lot of goals kicked on him, but he doesn't take as many intercepts as some of his alternatives. Vlosten's not. Now, I think Garthy, it was a really tough day at the office for Garthy. I think I feel a bit sorry for him because he keeps getting put in these terrible situations. Like, I know. You know,
matching up on really big opponents as well.
And without our traditional cover guys coming in to help him. He's in the worst possible circumstance, but he's not marking it, and he's getting a ton of goals kicked on him. So, like, things like that, like, it's not only is that costing us goals, but it's also costing our chance to potentially score off turnover. So, you know, this is contributing to the backline injuries. Perversely, are contributing to. I'm sure, like, it's complex, right? There's so many things happening in a football field, but our backline being injured is contributing, I think, to our lack of scoring.
I know, and our clanger statistics are really high the past month. Like, normally, like, having a positive turnover differential is a key part of our game, as you say. But yeah, we've been coughing the ball up a lot.
Yeah. Anyway, look, it's it's not great, but there is hope. Like, you know, the first structural, the cavalry's not really coming in the back line, although Broad may play this weekend. I don't know how Field will be, but
he's close-ish and sort of lost in a week or so after that.
Yeah, but the cavalry may be coming in the centre square because Dion Prestia played on the weekend, which...
did he? I've seen nothing about the scratch game. I'm so glad. So they've announced the VFL is resuming on Sunday against Frankston, which is great. It's a little bit sad. They were all set for a marquee matchup against Frankston on the Thursday night as a televised game, but sadly... I think they're playing without crowds this weekend, but it'll be good to have proper VFL footy back.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, and we'll be able to speak with more authority. But so they might be super cautious with Prestia, and you can hardly blame them. But on the other hand, this is sort of the game for the season now. One more loss, and it's especially to Fremantle, and it's over. Like, it's not statistically over, but it you know, if effectively it is, because Fremantle have now lost Walters and Mundy, and I think O'Brien is not on there.
No, they've lost Fife, but not Mundy.
Oh, sorry, I meant Fife. Sorry, Mundy's not as big as is a mild loss, but yeah, Fife is obviously a huge loss. They've lost their good young ruckman. Also, he's definitely hobbled.
Mundy is the 10th ranked player in the AFL at the moment on AFL player ratings.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah. And especially for someone who arrived as a convict, like, it's just incredible.
What a rags to riches story, literally. Prestia, if we do sort of roll the dice and play Prestia, there is a chance that at least addresses the first issue that I raised as a centre square, because he has been our most effective clearance player this year when he's played. So there's a bit of hope, and you know, we're favourites going into the Perth game, despite having lost five of our last six and playing in West Australia.
Nine point favourites, yeah. Well, should we go on to talk about Fremantle, or was there anything else?
I was trying to smoothly transition.
You were smoothly segue. Yeah, look, I think for Ralph Carr's highlights video that he sends around to clubs for Shea Bolton, I don't think this game will be on it.
Oh, the Geelong game? No, his AFL ranking was a disaster. It is sort of like, I've been thinking a lot about Bolton and sort of what happens if you're, like, put yourself in the position of another club thinking about, because they'll have to pay him a lot of money and they'll also have to trade for him. So, you know, you have to have an image of him of being a real, and the clubs that do it will not be the elite clubs. They'll be, you know, I think Fremantle is really the only chance of, say, if he wants to go back to Western Australia. Does Fremantle look at him and think that is he going to be a cart horse? Obviously not, but, you know, he's sort of more the icing rather than the cake player.
I think they desperately need some icing. It depends on what happens with Chera, who's obviously been subject to a lot of speculation, but they've got Brayshaw's, you know, 22 years old and averaging 28 disposals a game. Caleb Sarong's another good young midfielder.
Yeah, he's really good.
If Sean Darcy was a Richmond player, he would have his own segment on our show every week.
Oh, my God, I love him. Oh, I love him, yeah. Sean Darcy.
So, there's a lot of building blocks of grunt, but they need to replace Walters. You know, they've got a couple of good academy kids in Henry and Walker who've been playing a bit recently. But, yeah, they desperately need a bit more sizzle. I think it would make a ton of sense for them.
Yeah. Which is, and he's, Shea's like consistently one of the top rated players in his age group, which you'll sort of forget. He is very young, and midfielders aren't good when they're young. Now he's been helped by the role he plays in the Richmond team, but technically, like, I think maybe some people would think that, you know, he's not going to get much better, but actually, which is, well, you can debate it, but like, because he's slight, and I could see why. I have that 1-2 whether he's sort of now maxed out because of his natural body frame. But if he had a different body frame, you'd be saying he's a future superstar.
Yeah, like he's a 22-year-old averaging 20-plus disposals a game, 4 clearances, and a goal a game and a goal assist a game. Like a list.
Oh, and the advanced metrics love him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, he, and what that means in effect, he hand passes to a lot of dangerous positions. Anyway, we're getting off the point of the Fremantle game slightly, but it is an interesting audition for him, because at the very least, he'll want an offer from Fremantle to get more money from us.
We didn't talk about Marbs against Geelong, which was probably polite of us, but this is going to be a tough day at the office for him as well, because with Sean Darcy and Lloyd Meek, like, they're both 110 kilo plus, so Marbs is going to find it very difficult in the push and shove. But I think he's really got to take advantage of his mobility.
Yeah, it's sort of, I've talked, I'm exhausted by Marbs. There's been so many ups and downs.
I know. The highs are very high, but unfortunately, the lows are still pretty low. I mean, we've got a couple of really good friends who are Fremantle supporters, so we have a sense of how frustrating it is. But they are the least accurate goal kicking team in the competition. They rank 18th for disposals. Like, it does, their best player is 35 years old this season. Like, it is, they're a frustrating bits and pieces team. Like, there are some good young players that you can see from the rebuild, but yeah, I mean, their injuries are pretty bad as well. So yeah, we are solid, if not overwhelming, favourites. How do you feel about it?
I think Prestia is a game changer. So if he comes in, and obviously it's providing he's fit, I think that makes a huge difference, because it addresses our centre square weakness, which is just, you know, we're fighting in our weight division this week. You know, we're fighting a similar mid-table team with a similar amount of catastrophic injuries. So Prestia coming back takes care of what happened to us again and again over the last 5 or 6 weeks, is that, you know, even when we score a nice goal, the other team goes back and scores one straight away from the centre square. So if he plays, I'm relatively confident, and we've got a good record over there. If he doesn't...
We do. I was looking at that, and... With the new stadium, like, there should be nothing to fear from playing there.
Yeah. How about you? How are you feeling about the game?
Oh, look, it's Wednesday, so already start to feel a bit nervous and sick. But yeah, but I feel like we've got more of a structure of a good team than they do. So cautiously optimistic.
Fair. All right, Nick. I think now's a good time to go over to the Sarah Black interview.
Let's do it. And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And we've got, I think, third time guest, friend of the show, Sarah Black's very kindly agreed to join us. Welcome, Sarah.
Thanks for having me, guys. I don't think I'm a friend of too many shows, so that's quite nice to meet you. Thank you.
Well, these days you're a multi-platform superstar and have just put in an epic shift for the AFLW draft. So we're very grateful for your time tonight.
Yeah, no worries at all. Always love talking about the Tiger draftees.
Oh, no. Look, can I just say the whole draft show, like, you know, maybe, you know, we're still not doing as much in person maybe as we'd like, but it was a pretty slick performance, you know. I laughed, I cried, you know, it had drama. It was all good.
Yeah, good. There was a bit of scrambling because we had some plans when Melbourne was not in lockdown, going, oh, maybe we'll get, you know, a group of the Oakley girls together, and of course that all fell through when we were under lockdown. So, yeah, it was a huge behind-the-scenes effort from all the producers to tee up all the WebEx chats, and then you just hope that the internet connections hold, and luckily they did.
Yeah. No, it was great. Look, to go behind the scenes a little bit, we organised the interview before the draft and just doing a little bit of chit-chat, and we mentioned the one player that I mentioned that I really liked was Stella Reid, and you said, oh, I really like her too, but she's probably going to Geelong. First pick, number four to Richmond, Stella Reid.
Yeah, I was a big smile when I saw that. She at the time, I thought, like I'd heard from a lot of other clubs that Richmond were quite interested in Amanda Ling, so that was who I'd put down in the Phantom draft. But Amanda ultimately slipped, and I think went at 22, with the Tigers just opting to go for Stella. She's a really versatile player. She can play forward, she can play midfield, really beautiful user of the footy. I met her today and she's actually quite taller than I thought. She's probably a good 20 centimetres taller than me, so probably that 173 sort of height. And just as I said, a gorgeous user of the footy, so she'll fit in beautifully, I think.
Mm. So one of Andy's key football tenets is that if you're good at kicking on your preferred foot, you should only kick on your preferred foot. And so I think he's going to like Stella Reid.
Yeah, it's funny. She said today that she was wanting to practice, you know, practice on her right. Her left is her natural kick. So it's probably one of those ones where you think that you always need to work on your opposite. But what really stood out for Stella in the times that I've seen her, the under-19 champs and playing for Oakley, was that she just has this knack of bobbing up and kicking goals at just the right moment. And I don't think that's something you can teach. I think that's something that's quite innate. So, yeah, very, very good selection, I think, from the Tigers.
Is that a mix of endurance running and reading the play?
Probably, but, yeah, well, that's what I mean. I mean, in terms of reading the play, like, I think you can develop it, but if you can – not everyone can read the play really well, if you know what I mean. Like, I think it's an attribute, you know, speed is, for example. I think it's something you're born with in a way.
Yep, I completely agree. And she's a lovely mark.
Yes, she is. She is just good skills all around, lovely girl, just nice and genuine. Funny story, I actually got a message from my old music teacher out of the blue a couple of days ago saying, hey, you know, I'm teaching this girl trumpet and she's up for the draft, Stella Reid. You know, she's a lovely kid, great leader, you know, beautiful trumpeter. So, you know, she's got that in her kit bag as well if they ever need to pull out the trumpet.
Yes. Hard to imagine what scenario that would be. Maybe Anzac Day and the official bugler, you know, does a hemi. But, yeah, look, as you say, it's in the kit bag to be drawn on. Now, how do you see in her first year, how do you see her, you know, best case scenario, she gets fit and get plays round one, where do you see her making a contribution?
It's probably starting forward and being in midfield rotation rather than a starting midfielder. She mentioned to me, like, quite self-effacingly that she needs to get in the gym, and it's probably one of those ones where, you know, if you've been in Victoria, the opportunity to get into the gym over the last 18 months has been pretty slim. So she's probably not quite ready physically to match it with the Bree Davies of the world in the midfield, but sort of as that rotation and then gradually building up into it, that'll probably be how it works out, in my mind at least.
Yeah, there was a highlight of her, the big Tasmanian Ruckman tried to run her over, and she takes her to the ground. So I thought, oh, she looks pretty skinny, but maybe there's some core strength there.
Yeah, yeah. I think there is. I think she was more referring to sort of like maybe your arms and sort of, you know, so you're able to push off opponents and the like, rather than just the core. But yeah, she's got plenty of time, let's be honest.
And not everyone can be Ellie McKenzie.
No, definitely not. I think there's only one Ellie McKenzie, and lucky to have it.
And re-signed for 2 years. So the second first round draft pick was Amelia Yasir. The club mentioned about playing her as a forward. What did you think of her?
Yeah, I really like Amelia. She's really tough. She just loves to get in and win the footy. I've seen her play midfield for under 19 level. Watching her at VFLW, she's playing for Essendon at the moment. She should be in the prelim this weekend. I haven't seen the final teams, and has been playing forward there. And yeah, just a really, really smart player. Isn't afraid of getting in and winning the contested footy, but then has the speed to use it on the outside as well. So that makes a really, really damaging prospect and quite a well-rounded player.
Mm. I loved in the profile on the AFL website, on her wristband, you can see that she's written "Go Hard."
It's funny. I hadn't noticed that, but that's funny because I don't think she needs any reminders to do that. I think that's quite innate for her. She just loves to get in and win the footy. Just a really competitive girl, and uses it really well. So that's what you want in a first rounder.
Yeah, it was interesting. The Richmond recruiter used the phrase "fiercely competitive" twice when talking about her in 30 seconds. But it was also interesting that and you know, you have commented this. On this as well, but he mentioned that they're trying to play the Richmond game plan and bring that to the AFLW, and they're clearly trying to bring that pressure forward role into the AFLW team.
Yeah, I reckon it's something they tried with Cody Jacks season gone by, and it didn't quite come off. I don't think Cody quite won enough of the ball for it to be like she was almost purely a defensive forward as opposed to, you know, your Jake Arts who can hassle but then win their own footy. And that's probably a bit more of what Amelia is, more of that arts sort of type. But, you know, with all due respect to Jake, Amelia probably uses it a bit better when you compare it to the female point of view, if you know what I mean. Like, Jake's probably a better kick overall, but in the
relatively
games, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, it's sort of forgotten that, you know, George, of course, inspires mixed feeling amongst Richmond supporters, but he's an elite athlete. Rioli is an elite athlete. Like, it takes a lot of endurance and a lot of natural speed to really play that role at its best.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So next pick. So they traded away the next couple of draft picks, which maybe we'll get to later, but they had two fourth-round draft picks, the first of which... Megan Kiley. I think there are a lot of people really excited to see her get a go.
Yeah, this one's interesting. So Trent Mosby, the new recruiter who you spoke of, he's done an excellent job. I think he's really, really nailed this draft overall. But before he was at Richmond, he was helping out with North Melbourne's AFLW recruiting, and then he's been involved in AFL long before that. So he would have seen Megan up close. She's been the shining light of their VFLW program this year. Just an incredible accumulator of the footy. A bit older, you know, a bit bigger. So she, you know, unlike Stella, she'll be able to match it with those bigger AFLW bodies from the get-go in the middle of the ground. A Tasmanian who moved up here to develop her footy, which is always a good sign, that they're keen and that they work really hard. And that this is what they're after. So, you know, congrats to Megan that it's all paid off.
And from northwest coast of Tassie as well, which is pretty tough part of the world. So I was doing some research on her today, and on her, you know, she's a qualified physiotherapist, and on her profile page for her work, she says that she's a physiotherapist to AFL and AFLW players. So I'm wondering now Are people going to be able to say that they're a physiotherapist to her?
Oh, I didn't realise that. That's interesting. There's a few of them floating around, the physios who play AFLW. I know the Carlton co-captain, Karen Harrington, she also works with the, or has in the past at least, worked with the men's program as one of their physios. So it's a totally different world, AFLW.
Oh, it is. Yeah, she was the, and she used to be the physio for the Sydney Rabbitohs rugby league program.
Interesting. So she's, well experienced in the elite space by the sounds of that.
Now, can I just, I don't want to get off the focus on, as a fan, what we can expect from Megan next year. It seemed, would I be right in guessing that we might get a fairly quick, she might be sort of playing straight away day one and getting a reasonable amount of football?
I wonder. I haven't sat down and worked out the best 21 following the draft yet, believe it or not. especially with, I don't know whether Jess Hosking coming across also, because that'll be, God knows where they're going to play Jess. She's a really versatile prospect. But if, you'd probably put Jess in the midfield ahead of Megan just based on that AFLW experience. We'll just have to wait and see how it all pans out, I think.
So the last pick, Ingrid Hoetsma, which is a great name, but look, on the coverage, I thought Melissa Hickey really had a proud moment when talking about Ingrid.
Yeah, she was really happy that Ingrid got through. I think the sort of the picks were running out, and she probably, without sharing it, probably had her own little mental list of her girls who she wanted to get drafted, and it sounded like Ingrid was on it. It's funny, Mel was, raving about her strengths as a winger and how well she runs and carries the ball. But when I was watching her in the under-19s at country, I thought she was actually playing off half back. Just her work rate in running back to defence to intercept the play and set up the attacking foray was really, really promising. She reads the ball really well, safe pair of hands. And I think what we have been missing, the Richmond W team, is a quality tall winger. All due respect to Kate Dempsey and Hannah Birchall, they're not the tallest players going around and probably not the strongest wingers, although Kate had quite a good year. So Ingrid, maybe not straight away, in the next few years, could really lock down that role.
Yeah, and she's a good height. Same height as Gabby Seymour. Like, do you think she could play key position in time?
Potentially. Yeah, you sort of forget Gabby's got such a good jump. I could definitely see her playing key back. I'm sure she can play forward too. But just in my head, I've managed to earmark her as a defender. So I'm not quite sure why. Maybe she just seems to have strong defensive traits.
So you mentioned before about Jess Hosking. Like for most of us, that trade seemed to come pretty much out of nowhere. Was there much of a rumbling in the industry about it before it happened?
No, not at all. I'm just having flashbacks now. I'm sitting at my lap. I missed the story. Dan Cherney broke it and broke it well 10 minutes before deadline. That Jess had requested the trade. She'd requested the trade, to be fair, the Blues said that they had 25 hours notice before deadline, that Jess wanted the trade, and Richmond talking a similar number. So then it took a further, 24 hours for the story to break, 10 minutes before deadline. And I think it's safe to say that all hell broke loose. I think the Blues are really grumpy that it's happened in a way, just that because they've said on record that it was almost just that twin factor, and that Jess was just really desperate to play with Sarah, that she didn't feel comfortable playing by herself. She really wanted to be with Sarah, and I think they're grumpy in the regard that they can't do anything about that. That's nothing to do with their footy program. That's nothing to do with her relationship with the coaches or anything. They had no control over it. So Richmond have been the lucky beneficiaries of it. And, like I said, she's a really versatile player. She's a bit more dynamic than Sarah. Sarah's that real in and under tough nut, and Jess has a really good sidestep and just seems to make things happen when she goes near the footy.
Mm. Okay. For a real hard nut, she's great on social media. More Sarah than Jess, but kind of both together. They're just funny, and I don't know.
They're funny, they're clever, and they know how to use social media.
Yeah, I'm not sure I completely agree with your correlation there, Nick, between being good at contested football and being boring on social media, but we'll move on.
No, she's really good. It's a long off-season.
It's surprising that that you can be both. Sarah, can I ask, this is the time of the season where everything looks most optimistic. We've just unwrapped our shiny new draft picks. We've traded for some good mid-tier players. How would you, in the context of you see how all the AFLW teams have managed their off-season, would you say that Richmond has significantly, how would you rate Richmond's improvement relative to the improvement of the other clubs in the AFLW?
Well, that's tough. I think, unfortunately, for all expansion clubs, you're always going to be behind the eight ball. Until we get 10 years down the track, the ability to close that gap, there is still going to be a gap, I reckon. This year we're going to have the likes of Carlton, Collingwood, Melbourne. Their inaugural players will be coming into their seventh pre-season. And think about, the difference that would make on your body compared to girls who have played local footy and then two AFLW pre-seasons. You can't manage to close that gap. I think that the Tigers, compared to the other expansion teams, have done really well this off-season. St Kilda seriously struggled to attract any. They tried their hardest, but they couldn't attract any trade targets. Gold Coast did pretty well, but they're sort of operating in a different market, and again with West Coast. So I think the Tigers did quite well. They might have overhauled that gap maybe with the Giants. That's sort of that next group up, the Giants and the Dogs. They might have closed that gap a bit. But I don't think they'll be up there with the D's and the Pies.
Obviously, one of the big issues for AFLW is another round of expansion coming up. How well do you think Richmond's placed to sort of manage another?
Yeah,
the raiding parties coming.
Yeah, it is. I think every club, if it's going to be like last year, last expansion round, and I don't know if it is, then clubs will have to be prepared to give up. Victorian clubs, this is, be prepared to give up about four players or so, and then any more than that you have to trade for. So you could just lose four players and not be compensated for that. And that's where the Dogs really ran into some difficulties, losing Katie and Mon and all those sort of, and Emma Carney. So it's really, I think you you've just got to back the club and back that they have a good, happy culture there this year, this coming season. And the players, are not looking for a change or looking to move up the ranks. I think the pay system is really interesting in AFLW compared to the boys. It's a tiered payment structure. So only a certain amount of players get the top and then certain amount of players fit in at tier two, et cetera. So you might be looking at some girls who are sitting in tier four and tier three going, you know what, I think I'm worth a bit more money and I think Hawthorn can give me that money. That'll be, I imagine, where the most movement will come rather than those real marquee players.
Yeah, I was encouraged that they sort of, the top of the top, all locked away for 2 years. You know, Katie Brennan, Ellie, Mon. But, yeah, I do wonder the sort of the middle tier maybe, like Sophie Moylan, Laura McLennan sort of players, as you say, tier three and four, who are sort of going on 21, 22, they'd be prime targets.
Yeah, and one thing to keep in mind too with the contracts is that in order for the 2-year deals to go ahead this year, the AFL had to make a decision and say, look, if an expansion club comes for one of your contracted players, you have to let them walk because otherwise it's not fair. So just because they signed for 2 years doesn't necessarily mean that they'll stay for 2 years. It's effectively not really worth much, unfortunately.
Oh.
Yeah. It's not great.
Yeah, I must admit, I remember what it was like when we didn't have a club, but once we had an AFLW team, part of me wants to put the drawbridge up and no more expansion for a decade, but I know that's very selfish.
Yeah, I think Richmond fans have just got to cop their own medicine, having pillared, taken Mon and Katie, et cetera, Sabrina. It's just got swings and roundabouts.
Thank you, Sarah, and that fascinating wrap of the off season, and even though that's a sobering note to end on, there's a lot of optimism, and I'm really looking forward to the next season. Could I turn briefly to the men's? And there's a question I've been dying to ask you that you a couple of years ago you wrote a really thoughtful piece about Josh Caddy in the VFL and his transition in his role. And I wanted to ask you, given your background and you've studied him fairly closely. What sort of, a lot of Richmond supporters are asking, why isn't he in the team? And what's your working theory of why that is?
It's a tough one because I think, as much as we would like to think that we know what's going on, we don't know what's going on. We don't know what the coaches are thinking. We don't know what they're looking for, hence the rubbish that Jason Castagna and Daniel Rioli often cop because it looks like they're not doing anything when in fact they're running their guts out. I wonder if Josh's issue is speed, to be perfectly honest, and whether they seem to really like the marking target that Camden presents on the wing. Unfortunately he's not there at the moment. I was surprised that Caddy wasn't when they said, no, we're not going to go with Naish, we're going to go with Ross. I was surprised that they went with Ross instead of Caddy, because he does bring a lot of there's, that real mongrel that that Marlon can often bring. Marlon's also got the versatility that he can go into the ruck for better or worse. Sometimes it pays off, sometimes it doesn't. So I really don't know. I loved the Josh Caddy of 2017. But I'm not sure that we're ever going to get that back. Just I think that role in the current Richmond setup is a little bit redundant.
Yeah, and I completely agree with everything you just said. And he does just when you watch him live, you do notice he's just not getting to the same spots the quicker Richmond wingers do. I will also say, as much as fans. It's easy to criticise selection, but if you look at the counterfactual, okay, we're a team at the outskirts of the eight needing to blood some young players for next year. If we were playing Caddy in front of the kids, we'd probably be complaining about that too. So the basic rule with fandom is that you're probably never happy.
Yeah, definitely.
Sarah, you've been in the cave researching the draft. I assume for quite some time. What's the priorities for you now? Are you going to have a break, or do you get thrown straight onto other assignments?
Yeah, it's funny. Me and my editor, Chris Cryer, who's an amazing supporter of W, we've been talking for the last couple of months, going, it's the off season. We'll wind back the content. And I think we've been punching out more than we would in season. So this is finally, we've reached the month where we can wind back the content. So a few little bits and pieces over the next couple of weeks. Expect the expansion announcement, in the next few weeks. So that'll be the biggest focus. Then hopefully take a couple of weeks off for the first time in a long time. And then pre-season's meant to start in September, which is horrifyingly soon. I think, I can sug as much as I want, but I think it's going to be really hard on clubs because they can't just go, I might skip the first week of preseason. They have to be ready to go. They have to work on game plans in the next month or so to turn it all around. So I think there's going to be some very tired people at club level.
Yeah.
But, and we're certainly, you know, you hear the grumblings at with both the men's and the women's about that. Sarah, since we've had a few sobering conversations to end with, I want to end on a positive note and ask you one thing that you're most looking forward to in the AFLW season and the remainder of the men's season.
Oh, wow. That's incredibly broad. let's think. Do you want a Tiger focus?
Of course.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I would love to see Courtney Wakefield just have an absolute day out. I'm not sure how much footy we're going to get from her going forward. I think she said that it's one more year, and she's one of my favourites. And I don't think she gets the recognition she deserves.
She does on this podcast.
Yeah, for what she does. So I'd love her just to kick a bag of five.
Surely you get one more year and then you try and nudge her for one more year.
You'd think, but honestly, what she does and what she has to leave behind up on the farm in Mildura, I don't know how she does it. You know, you hate singling out people and go, oh, she's a mum of two, you know, like she's more than that. She's Courtney, she's a person, but there's no denying that that's a huge part of her.
Well, thanks very much.
Sarah, just with the men's as well, and, you know, maybe it's Daniel Rioli coming off the halfback flank where he seems to be flourishing. Is there one thing that you're enjoying? Because, you know, let's face it, the team isn't quite as good as it has been the last few years, so the games aren't quite as fun to watch. But is there something you've been – is there a glimmer of hope that you've found in the last 5 or 6 weeks?
Well, a quick one that I'd love to see Shane Edwards get some continuity because he's my favourite, and I'd love his quick hands. But I have really found some joy in watching Sydney Stack and his confidence blossom over the last couple of weeks. You know, we all know how hard a journey he's had, and so for him to get back on the AFL field in a relatively new position, and I think he's shown a lot of maturity too. He seems to be concentrating really hard, playing out all four quarters. So I've loved Stacky in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think that hit he put on last week, it was a shame there wasn't a crowd there, because I think that he would have got 50,000 people saying "ooh" simultaneously.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, well, thank you so much for your time, Sarah.
No worries, guys. It was good to chat. Round out the draft.
Oh. Round out the draft, yeah. Look, Will, it's an epically long pre-season, but we'd love to talk to you again when we get close to the real thing. It was one of the other things from the draft broadcast. There was, I think, the phrase "clean air" came up about 6 times. So I think
that's a official AFL talking point.
but no, really looking forward to it. Thanks as always. Enjoy a well earned break, and yeah, we'll hopefully talk to you again.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks, Sarah.
It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
You're talking about 3 flags by 2020.
Fitzroy's played more finals than you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010. Carmichael Hunt. Pick up Jeffrey. He does. Carlton are on their way to Sydney.
West on to kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Can he just slow? He's gone. No free kick, surely.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
It's the start! Go Tigers.